proceed to case number six, please.
By the way, you were appointed, pardon me, you were appointed both in the trial court and here.
Thank you for your good work.
Thank you.
Mangalardi versus the United States.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is John Moran.
Thank you, Professor.
May it please the court, opposing counsel. Your Honors, this is an appeal from the denial of a position paper on the issues remaining in a 2255 petition. A petition was filed by Mr. Mangalardi on April 21 of 1997. I was appointed by the district court in April of 1999 to represent
him. You've been around a long time with the case, then.
Judge, it's been quite a while. A significant part of the time was to determine what issues remain due to a waiver clause that was in the agreement. The district court made a ruling on that. I think it took me 2 years to get the district court to rule as to what the scope of the waiver was. And after he made that ruling, I indicated that numerous issues that had been raised in the original petition were not properly before the court. And so the 27 original issues were basically reduced to, in my judgment, one issue. And then we had two. And we had two additional issues. Thank you, Judge. Well, the two additional issues are the issues that are really the issues before the court, because it's our petition, our position that the district court erred in two respects. He erred, he abused his discretion when he denied our petition for discovery or for an evidentiary hearing as to testimony regarding a hit on Mr. Mangalardi that was revealed to defense counsel on the eve of the cross-examination of Otis Moore, who was the government's key witness as to the drug charges against Mr. Mangalardi in this particular case. It's important to note, because I filed a motion to strike as well, because at no point in the district court did the government get into any of the facts of the offenses. And so we, on appeal, I was faced with a brief that sounded more like a brief in response to a motion or to an argument on the sufficiency of the evidence. And I don't think that was appropriate at this time, given the procedural background of this case, especially in light of the fact that, as I indicated earlier, I sought to obtain discovery on these two issues. The government also indicated that my discovery motions were insufficient, and I laid out the specifics of one of those motions so that the court could see that I did fulfill the specificity and particularity requirements of the rules governing discovery in habeas corpus. In this particular case, the hit evidence was disclosed on the eve of the cross-examination. It wasn't disclosed completely, it was disclosed partially. Buried in the middle of a late-filed letter to defense counsel was a comment that Gerald Warner, another police officer from the Chicago Heights Police Department, had told the government at some point, it doesn't say when, that Mr. Otis Moore, the key witness against Mr. Mangalardi and a well-known drug dealer, had in fact had a hit on Mr. Mangalardi. What is the significance of this? Well, if he was trying to hit the guy that he was bribing, it's a very strange course of events. If in fact he was bribing Mr. Mangalardi at all, the district court itself on the record indicated once or twice that if he had heard the case sitting as a bench trial, he might not have come to the same conclusion as the jury on this particular issue, but he didn't want to revisit the issue. 11 police officers testified. None of them said anything about Sam Mangalardi taking a bribe. The other issue has to do with the testimony or the affidavit of a Raymond Cooper. Raymond Cooper was the number one guy for this Otis Moore drug operation. And Raymond Cooper's affidavit basically says that he would have known if Otis Moore was paying off Sam Mangalardi, and in fact, he said Otis Moore was not paying off Sam Mangalardi. And the payments were supposed to be $10,000 a month. There's a comment in the government brief that Mr. Mangalardi was trying to open up some kind of a retirement fund for himself or something of that nature.
I'd say that was that made sense. $10,000 a month, you could set up quite a fund.
That would be true, Judge, if in fact it happened.
Yeah.
And in fact, as the district court itself noted, no such monies were ever found. The district court itself had serious questions as to whether or not there was actually a particularized ruling on what monies, if any, had ever been paid to Sam Angelardi by Otis Moore, and that arose out of the fact of a federal IRS tax prosecution against Mr. Mangiolardi and his wife out in Arizona, and the fact that although the government dug up every inch of Mr. Mangiolardi's yard, went through his house, went through everything he owned, every bank account, they never found any of this money. So apart from that, the Raymond Cooper statement, the failure to order an evidentiary hearing on that, I think, rises to constitutional error, just as I think the failure to order discovery rises to constitutional error. In this particular case, where the only evidence on this drug matter, or the only serious evidence, and I, again, would indicate that the government did not raise a lot of these other factual things in the district court that are now in their brief, which I would have responded to in the district court, such as Mr. Alexander, who testified to some relationship with drugs, and Otis Moore, because Mr. Alexander at the district court, if one examines the transcripts, testified or admitted on cross-examination that he was Otis Moore's supplier. So why would he be competing with him? But these issues are not properly addressed. I asked either leave of court to file a reply on the facts, if that's where we're going to go with this particular case, or more importantly, I think the case should be remanded to conduct the limited discovery, although it sounds like a lot of discovery. Taking the deposition of three individuals is not a lot of discovery, nor is making their files available. The individual who mentioned the Otis Moore testimony, the Otis Moore hit testimony, Gerald Warner, was in federal custody at the time. I just find it highly probative of the fact that the reference to a hit on Mangiolardi is not disclosed until the eve of Otis Moore's cross-examination, when it's impossible to find Mr. Werner and bring him in or to get any evidence or any of the documents. Why didn't the government attach the 302 that they claimed that they had from Mr. Werner? Why didn't they attach any of these other documents? If you're going to say, oh, by the way, and what about the fact that isn't it, it seems to me more likely than not that the government would have asked Mr. Moore, well, Officer Werner says that you had a hit out on Sam Angelardi, your deputy chief. Is it true? Isn't there some record of that? It would seem to me that any competent investigator would certainly turn around, especially in light of the fact that Otis Moore had told three different stories, and it was the third story, and this all came out in his cross-examination at trial, the third story as to how to inculpate Mangiolardi. It's the third story when it's just Moore and Mangiolardi that comes into the record that he's paying off Moore. The other stories weren't introduced because there were third parties around and they did not corroborate the stories, so they weren't introduced. That's in the trial record as well.
You're in your rebuttal time. I don't know if you...
So, Your Honors, I think that both issues deserve further discovery, the limited discovery that I asked for, and that the matter should be remanded for the conducting of an evidentiary hearing following such limited discovery.
Thank you. All right, counsel.
May it please the Court. Valerie Hayes on behalf of the United States. Appellant's counsel raised several arguments, none of which justify reversal of the district court's denial of Mangiolardi's 2255 petition or the denial of discovery in an evidentiary hearing. Mangiolardi was a high-ranking official with the Chicago Heights Police Department. One of the crimes for which he was convicted was extorting money from a major drug dealer named Otis Moore in return for protecting Moore's drug organization. Now, Appellant's counsel raised the fact that government addressed factual issues in the brief. Appellant's counsel opened the door by contending that Otis Moore was the only witness against Mangiolardi regarding some of the charges, and he could have responded in his reply brief to any factual disputes. In regard to Mangiolardi's assertion that he was entitled to discovery and an evidentiary hearing, regarding allegations that government witness Otis Moore had put a hit out on Mangiolarity, he waived the right to raise that issue. After the trial, Mangiolarity entered into a pre-sentence agreement in which he waived the right to bring up any 2255 issues relating to the discovery of new evidence known to Mangiolarity at the time he entered into the agreement. And he was certainly aware of the alleged hit scheme at the time he entered into the agreement. It is undisputed that that was brought to the attention of defense counsel during the trial, and in fact, defense counsel asked Otis Moore about it during cross-examination. He also waived the right to bring the claim regarding the hit evidence because he didn't raise it on direct appeal and failed to show cause and prejudice. As to the Raymond Cooper affidavit, the affidavit was submitted following the habeas court or the 2255 position, and it gives a somewhat exculpatory story pertaining to Mangiolarity's acts of extortion, and is completely different from the incriminatory statements Raymond Cooper made to FBI agents prior to the trial. And the Cooper affidavit did not say that he would have known if Moore was giving bribes to Mangiolarity. He just said that to his knowledge he didn't know about it. So at best, the affidavit raises the question of whether Cooper would have impeached or corroborated Otis Moore's testimony at trial. The district court treated Mangiolarity's request for discovery on this issue as an actual innocence claim and rejected that claim. On appeal, Mangiolarity criticized the district court's interpretation of the claim and claimed that it actually impacted his right to prepare a defense, suggesting that the government somehow knew that Raymond Cooper would provide exculpatory information at trial. And the argument raised because it was waived because it was not raised on direct appeal. And furthermore, the Cooper affidavit has no credibility whatsoever because Cooper changed 180 degrees from what he said to government officials prior to the trial, and in no way suggests that the government knew he would provide exculpatory information if he testified at trial. The government respectfully requests that this court affirm the judgment below.
Thank you, counsel.
Your Honors, just briefly in reply, in regard to Otis Moore, the question of Otis Moore being the sole witness on the question of bribes was raised in the 2255 petition below. It wasn't opened the door on our brief on appeal. And since it was raised below, one would have thought that there would be a response there too if they took issue with the factual situation. Again, we have an unusual procedural background here. The petition was filed. It was modified after a scope of hearing motion by the government and a ruling by the trial court. We don't have the usual petition traverse response situation. As far as Raymond Cooper goes, the government asserts that he made incriminating statements to the government and therefore the court could properly find that there was a reasonable issue. There's no reasonable issue on the merits. Where are those documents? Where's the witness? I mean, to find that in a pleading is one thing, that's the only place I found it. So I think the case needs to be remanded. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel, and thank you for accepting the appointment. Thank you, counsel. Court is adjourned until 9:30 a.m. tomorrow morning.